So, morning, picking up from the Gemara. So, yesterday or 2 days ago, you should have learned about Rabbi Yosef's opinion. If you look up, it's about 10 lines down on Nun Amud Beis. I know we're not up to there. I'm just going back to give us some context for today for Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. See, the last three words in the line are Amar of Yosef. So, two lines above that, you have a Tana Rabbanan that says, Hechalil Doches HaShabbos. Playing the flute pushes off Shabbos. I mean, you can even do that on Shabbos. Sivar, Yosef, Bar, Yehuda, V'chamim, Omrim, Af Yom Tov, V'enu, Doche, it's not even, doesn't even push off Yom Tov. So Amar of Yosef, Yosef explains that, Machlokes Bashir Shel Korban. This is the Machlokes that relates to the music that would be played, the Chalil that would be played in front of the Mizbeach. Okay, when they would pour wine for the Tamid, for the Korban Tamid, which was a daily occurrence, and they would play this flute. So that's what they're, that, says Rabbi Yosef, is what their machlokas is about. Rabbi Yosef Shavar Iker Shira Bekli. The Rabbi Yosef says the main Shira that's being going on there is with an instrument, therefore the instruments are part of sort of this sacrifice and would even push off Shabbos. Va'avodahi, and therefore it's part of it, V'dochas HaShabbos. Rabbanan Savri, no, Iker Shira Bepeh. They hold the main singing is actually mouth. That's, and therefore the flute is not something. Won't push off Shabbos. Aval shir shall show eva divrei hakol simcha hivein adochas Shabbos. And Rabbi Yosef says, but the simcha space show eva playing. He says that would not be docha Shabbos. Everybody agrees to that. Okay, so again, he says the machlokes between them is in regards to korban music, not Simchas Beis HaShoeva music. Simchas Beis HaShoeva music does not push off Shabbos. Korban music is a machlokes, depending on whether you hold Iker Shira B'peh or Iker Shira B'kli. Iker Shira B'peh meaning that the main focus is to sing anyway, so therefore having these other instruments there is just what we call musical accompaniment, and musical accompaniment is nice, but that doesn't mean it's part of the Avoda, whereas the other opinion holds, no, it's actually part of the Avoda to play this flute. All clear? So, with that in mind, Amar of Papa. If you jump down to the last three words on the Amud on Nun Amud Beis, Kitanai. This is a machlokes tanaim. Really should say ditnan because it's a Mishnah. Avde kohanim hayu. If you look at Rashi, Rashi gives you some context here. Look at Rashi. Avde kohanim. Mishnah b'meseches arachin hi al ochze klei shir bishas shir shel korban kayaminan. He says there's a discussion in a Mishnah in Arachin about who would hold the instruments at the time that they were doing the shir that accompanies the korban. Right? Again, the korban tamid, as we mentioned. So look at this machlokes. One opinion says, avdei kohanim hayu, the people holding it were the slaves of the kohanim. Okay? Divrei Rabbi Meir, that was the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Omer, mishpachas beis hapigaron, umishpachas beis tziparia, umei amum hayu. And they were from Amum. Shehayu Masin Lakuna, and you were able to marry from those families, the Mishbachas Beis Abkarim and Mishbachas Beis Tzifaria, you were able to marry off from those families to the Kohen, meaning we knew that everybody from that family was considered a pure Yisrael, and there were no questions about whether or not a Kohen could marry them. Okay, and finally, the last opinion says, Rabbi Chanina ben Atukunus Omer Leviim Hayu. And Rav Chanina ben Atikna says they were actually the VM who were holding it. So a three-way machlokas, who was holding the instruments? Was it the Avadim, the slaves of the Kohanim? Was it these two mishpachos of Yisraelim who were considered miyuchas, who were considered, you know, that they had yichus, meaning, again, that they're allowed to be married to the Kohanim because they didn't have any bad or questionable relationships in the marriages in that family. And finally, Rav Chanina ben Atikna says it's Leviim. So Rav Papa is trying to compare this to the machlokes of Iker Shira Beper, Iker Shira Bekli. So says the Gemara, My love, Behaka Mifligi, is this not their machlokes? Demand the Amar Avadim Hayu Kasavar Iker Shira Beper. The one who says that it was slaves holding the instruments. So they must hold that it was Iker Shira Beper, meaning the instruments don't really matter. So if you have the Avadim holding it, and Avadim are certainly not fit for something like this, that's fine. Uman damar Leviim hayu, but the other opinion who says that it was Leviim, kasavar ikra shira bekli. He must hold that it was Leviim who were playing, and that's the ikra shira, therefore the Leviim needed to do it. So ask the Gemara, what's a question that you might ask if you were at this point in the Gemara? How many opinions did we list?
Three.
So what do you mean? This person holds this, and this person holds this. Ask the Gemara of Itizbara. Rabbi Yossi Maika Savar. So what is the middle sheet to hold? Ika Savar Iker Shira Bipeh. If he holds that it's about that the Iker Shira is Bipeh, that the whoever's holding the instruments is irrelevant, and it doesn't matter who's playing because the main Shira that's being done by the Levium is with their mouths. So Afilo Avadim Nami, why does he restrict it to the special family of Kohanim? He should allow even Avadim to do it. And Ika Savar Ika Shira Bikli, and if he holds that, again, it has to be done as an instrument, Levium in Yisraelim Lo, the Yisraelim wouldn't be able to take part in that. That would have to be the mitzvah of the Levium. That's what their job is, to do the Shira in the Beis HaMikdash. So it's a Gemara, Ela Dekulei Alma Ika Shira Bipeh Uvahaka Miflagi. Says the Gemara, everybody actually holds that Iker Shira Bipeh. And really, anybody can be up there doing the instruments because it's not part of it. Uvahaka Miflagi, here's what they're arguing about. Demar Savar Haki Hava Maaseh. Umar Savar Haki Hava Maaseh. A very practical approach, which you rarely ever see in the Gemara, which says, you've ever heard the story, you've ever heard the line, you don't ask a kasha on a maisa? What it means is, sometimes that's just how the story was. So says the Gemara, everybody agrees Iker Shira Bipeh, and they're arguing about what actually happened. One person says, I think my tradition was that this happened. And the next guy says, no, this is what happened. The next guy says, no, this is what happened. Now again, we tend to distance ourselves from machlokas like this. There's this strong push to avoid a machlok, what we call a machlokas in metzias. That we don't like to have people arguing about factual reality. So it's, although we sometimes see it in rare cases that people do argue about actually something, was it like this or was it like this? This is a case of that, where one person saying, this is what happened in the Beis HaMikdash, another one saying, this is what happened, another one saying, this is what happened. Now, that's because they weren't clearly alive at that time. If they were, there probably wouldn't be. There are usually, as you get to more and more, you know, certain streams of learning, they'll try to find different ways to show how when you see a machlokas in reality, it's not really a machlokas in reality, it's how they considered it. So, you know, something like that, someone like that might approach us and say, really, these people were doing it at different times. The question is, who is the main group? Like, that would be the type of approach that you tend to see, that again, we want to minimize actual fights about just fact, because then what's the point of an argument? As soon as you can figure out what the truth is, really the other opinions become irrelevant, and that's something that we like to avoid. But nevertheless, the simple way of reading it is, one says this happened, one says this happened, and one says this happened.
Why do we like to avoid? Because the assumption is that if there's a tradition on either side that in fact it happened?
Well, we like to say that things are rooted in truth, but also we like to say that these things are meaningful. If the whole shas would just be full of machlokas as to whether something is factually correct or not,
right.
That really loses meaning. All it does is basically say, oh, we have a shattered Mesorah. And in fact, that's usually not the case. Usually it represents different traditions or different reasonings as to why we might do something, right? So if we have a machlokas, on what bracha to make, for example, on something, that would be rooted in, well, is this considered a fruit or a vegetable? That's a very legitimate machlokas, as opposed to saying, I believe this is this, and I believe this is this. That's, you know, so that tends to be the reason why
So you have something like, one of the things that I see where various opinions come on is, let's say, eating quinoa on Pesach.
Yes.
So there's different sort of opinions that way.
Right, and it's not just that one person got up and said, I know that quinoa was allowed, and the other person says, I know that quinoa wasn't allowed. There's reasons behind that that says, I think that quinoa is allowed because it falls under the category of kidney out by this definition. The other guy says, I think that quinoa is not allowed because it falls under this definition of kidney out. Another one says, I think quinoa is allowed because it differs than kidney out in this and this and this and this way. So again, we're always trying to find a rationale for why they disagree, as opposed to just saying they're disagreeing on a reality.
But at the end of the day, there is sort of a little bit of a machloket, isn't it? Because certainly, some people will eat it and some people won't. And so, is that a machloket or not?
I'm not following the question. Meaning, it is a machloket. Some people say yes and some people say no. And some people follow the yes people and some people follow the no people. What's the issue with that?
From what you were just saying before, we don't have machloket on lemaisa, or things that we're doing.
No, we definitely have machloket on lemaisa. We don't have machloket. I mean, again, we try to avoid or limit machloket that was about factual reality. Obviously, most machlokot that are in logic will end up with different ramifications, and will end up with one person saying this is a good idea and one person saying this is a bad idea. But the objective is to say not everything that we have is just a machlokas about did it happen this way or did it happen that way. That's really what we're trying to avoid. So, for example, rather than looking at machlokos, let's say in Maseches Nida, as this person thinks that, you know, childbirth happens this way and this person thinks that childbirth happens that way, we'd rather say this person views childbirth differently because of such and such a halachic background. But especially in cases of science and things like that, we try to move away from the machlokas and mitzvahs, because then, again, one's just rejected and one's just right. Now, there are times when, and certainly in later sources, we do this a lot less, right? So if someone tells me about a machlokas between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach about a technology, for example, we'll say, okay, well, he got it right and he got it wrong. That we will do. It's just usually in the Gemara we like to avoid that. And again, also, whenever possible, we like to avoid that. That being said, there are many places where we do say, you know, such and such got it right, such and such got it wrong. Sometimes even the Gemara themselves say that in some places. So,
I wanted to ask you, they throw in this idea of the yichus of these Israelim.
Yes, good question.
So it implies to me that there were obviously problems with all other families, potentially, besides these two.
So not necessarily all other families, but many other families, yes. There were different guidelines on Kohanim's marriages and how far you had to check. If you look, the Mishnayos and the Gemara and Kiddushin talk about the different discussions as to what you have to look at and how far back you have to look to trace people to see if there are any questionable, again, relationships that took place in their families. So we do have this idea of miyuchasim, where you don't need to check altogether. Now, whether or not you're allowed to marry other people, you know, certainly nowadays we do, and it's not a problem.
But what kind of things, like, obviously there are the standard type of women that the Torah talks about that the Kohanim cannot marry,
mm-hmm.
But going back, like, let's say, I mean, I'm just trying to think what they would be worried about beyond those things, which
right,
would be that generation.
So it's actually not that generation. That's the issue, is most of the, I was going to say, illegal relationships,
right,
or people that marry into a family will often pass down, even if people don't know, for many generations. So for example, let's say there was, just because this is the classic case, a mamzer in the family 5 generations up.
Right.
All their kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, great-grandkids, are all mamzerim.
Right. But there would also be an issue for that type of person to marry another Jew. Like,
correct, and that's what's discussed in Kiddushin as to when everybody needs to look into. But there are other things that Kohanim have to be worried about as well that regular Yisraelim do not. So again, if
no,
you want to see...
That's what I would assume, something like a mamzer. But for example, like let's say, you know, there was a divorced woman 3 generations...
So right, so divorced woman is correct. Divorced woman doesn't matter.
Yeah,
right.
So the only issue, wouldn't it be the only issue really
no.
be a mamzer?
No.
what other, can you give another example of another, something going back that would affect a Kohen?
We talk about Chalalim, Nesinim, things like that. I mean, you have to see, there's a whole list I think it's the last, fourth parak, I think, of Kiddushin, that talks about all the different types of Yichuses,
right?
I mean, you have to worry about, I mean, in general, we know the different levels, many of them. We know Kohanim, Levim, Israelim, and then there's also these other ones, who can Geirim marry, who can Nesina marry,
right,
who can Mamzera marry, who can, you know, Adomi, Moavi, after, you know, well, in those cases, not usually
right.
most people, but yes, there are stages which the Kohanim have to worry about, which the Yisraelim do not have to worry about, and things like that. Okay. But yeah, this is an idea. Thanks for reminding me, because I was going to send you off to Kiddushin if you're interested to learn more about this. There is this idea that we check mehaduchan ulemala, that you don't have to check once somebody's gotten back to the duchan. We're going to discuss that a little bit more now in the Gemara. At the end of the day, the Gemara says one possibility is that this one's saying this is how it was, another one's saying this is how it was, third one's saying this is how it was. hachahava masa. So ask the Gemara. Okay. Lemayil nafkamina. So asks the Gemara, why should we care if one was off, you know, if one was saying that it was this way and this way and this way? Says the Gemara, at the very least, there's going to be something which comes out of this. Lemalin miduchan leyuchsin ulemaaser kamiflagi. In that we will, the question is, will we make an equation as to the person's status from the fact that they were on the duchan? Meaning, if you knew that a certain individual was there present with the instruments at the time of the korban, what does that tell you about them? So let's go through it outside first. If you're going to say there were Leviim and someone has evidence that their great-grandfather was on the duchan, so it means that they are a Levi. Right, again, if it's only Leviim that were doing this, and someone can bring evidence that their family members were there, it means that they are 100% a bona fide Levi. If these families of Yisraelim were the ones doing it, if someone can bring evidence that they were there, then their family is a bona fide Yisraeli. It has no problems of marrying Tikkuna. We know their family is pure. And according to the last opinion, that there were even slaves up there, it means nothing. It's meaningless. Anybody could have been up there, and it doesn't prove anything about Yichus. That's what the Gemara is going to explain now. Lemalin.
Just one thing. Physically, other than a Kohen, who's allowed to be around that korban, that Mizbeach? Where are these people standing to sing?
So these people were standing somewhere which was accessible to all. It was outside of the place where only Kohanim can be, if I remember correctly. I think when we did this stuff in Daf Yomi, at the end of the cycle, the end of Kodshim, we had like the whole Beis HaMikdash. There was actually a model that someone brought in. But it was in the place where these people were allowed to be standing, yes. And that would have been, pretty good proof, actually, for this discussion. So says the Gemara. So, right? Lemalin miduchan liyuchsin ulemaaser kamiflagi. They're arguing about whether or not you can make an equation if someone was, again, present and part of this ceremony, whether or not you can make the equation to their yichus and the equation to whether or not they can eat maaser. That's what they're arguing about. Manda amar avarim hayu. The person who says, avarim kastavar ein ma'alin miduchan liyuchsin. So that person says, you cannot equate the fact that someone is on the duchan for anything. It means nothing. There were avadim there. Right? Not leyochsin, velo lemaiser. And certainly, someone can't eat maiser if they were up on the duchen as a levi. Umanda, amar Yisrael, hayu, and the person who says that they were Yisraelim, kasavar, malin, miduchan, leyochsin. And that opinion holds that they were Yisraelim, meaning you can equate people who are on the duchen to people who are allowed to marry even kohanim without checking. Right? Aval lo lemaaser. But that doesn't mean you can allow them to eat maaser because they were Yisraelim there. And Yisraelim are not allowed to eat maaser. That's only for a Levi. And finally, umanda amar Leviim hayu, the opinion that says that there were Leviim there, kasavar malin miduchan bein leyuchsin bein lemaaser. That opinion holds the fact that they were on the duchan means you can rely on them for yichus, you can rely on them for maaser, all good. And that's really what the machlokes ends up being over here. Their machlokas is, it's expressed in this fashion, and again, this is sort of the type of way that you see people try to avoid a machlokas in Mitzvah. So it's, hey, their machlokas is expressed by who was there, and they're really arguing about whether or not you can make this equation. And they're writing it by saying, this one was here, this one was there, this one was in the next place. We've got a few more minutes here. So, for Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba Amar, no. Machlokes b'shir shel shoeva. So now we get back to our original Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef explained that the machlokes between Rabbi Yosef bar Yehuda and Chachamim about whether or not the flute can push off Shabbos or not even Yom Tov, he understood that Rabbi Yosef understood it as referring to the regular day korban. Rabbi Yirmiyah said, bar Abba says no. He says, machlokes b'shir shel shoeva. Their argument is actually about the song that's played, the songs that were played accompanying the process of the Shoeva, of the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, to Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda Savar Simcha Yisera Nami Doches HaShabbos, that Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda is of the opinion that this extra Simcha is indeed even allowed to push off Shabbos. So if the day that they were drawing the water ended up being Shabbos, so be it. That's what they would accompany with music. V'rabbanan savri simcha yisei reina dochas haShabbos. Just because it's a big simcha doesn't mean you can push off Shabbos for it. The question is whether or not this was, I guess, reaching the threshold of an avoda, so to say, they were doing in the Beis Hamikdash. But simcha yisei reina, maybe one would say that. I don't think that Rabbi Yirmiyah is suggesting that according to Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda, if it makes you happy, you can do it on Shabbos. I don't think that's what he's trying to say. But this type of simcha, right?
This is Shabbat, as you saw, Shabbat Kol HaMoed service, right?
Yes.
Right, yes, yes. And you can see back on the previous Amun, I see you discussed it already. That's something which is to be Mechave Ves HaMitzvos is going to be Mutter on Shabbos. Anyways. Therefore, so he says the machlokas refers to the shir shel shoeva, not the shir shel of the regular korban, and therefore aval b'shir shel korban divrei hakol avoda hi v'doche asah shabbos. So he's going to have the flip side. He says everybody agrees about the shir shel korban that it's allowed. Their machlokas is about the shir shel shoeva, as opposed to Rabbi Yosef, who said their machlokas is about the korban, and no one says the shir shel shoeva is good. Okay, so that's the basic machlokes in the Gemara. One opinion way back there, one opinion here. Let's see how the Gemara continues. Okay. So we ask a question. So the problem is the Gemara now asks a question from a Braisa. The Braisa says explicitly that they're arguing about the Shir Shel Shoeva. So says the Gemara, right? Tiyufta de Rav Yosef Tiyufta. This actually disproves Rav Yosef. Rabbi Yosef said their machlokas is about korban. We have a brisa which explicitly says, following the opinion of Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba, that it's referring to a machlokas about the shoeva. Very good. So once again, we had two opinions. Rabbi Yosef's opinion that the machlokas was about korban and that no one says it's dochet shoeva. We then had the opinion of Yirmiyah Bar Abba, who says that the machlokas is about shoeva and everybody says it's dochet korban. And we've now brought a brisa which states explicitly that their machlokas here is about shoeva. Okay? And therefore that disproves, says the Gemara of Yossi. Says the Gemara, lema, right, tiyufta de Yossi, tiyufta lema bishir shel shoeva hu depligi aval bishir shel korban divrei hakol doches haShabbos. And we would say, therefore, that also it would be assumed that since they're only arguing about the shir of shoeva, that the shir shel korban, everybody should agree, is doches haShabbos. Lema tavi tiyufta de Rav Yosef vitarti. And then we should say it's not only disproving Rav Yosef about the halachos of shoeva, but from this implication we can say it disproves Rav Yosef about the halachos of korban. Meaning, certainly it's at odds with Rav Yosef about shoeva. That there's no question. He says that shoeva nobody says is allowed. Here we have an explicit brisa saying that it's a machlokas. That for sure we've disproved Rav Yosef. The question is, even beyond that, will we then say that based on this brisa, that everybody agrees that korban is okay? Or might we still say that it's a machlokas there as well? In which case we can at the very least salvage Rabbi Yossi's opinion about korban. Meaning, maybe Rabbi Yossi would tell you, it's true that they argue about shoeva, but maybe they also argue about korban. So again, he's certainly wrong about shoeva, that we've conclusively proven. The question is he also wrong about korban? That's what the Gemara is discussing now. And they say, oh, we're already late. Fine. You know what? So we'll stop over here. Thank you.